Chapter 20. Dust on the Wind. As they left the Whitestone building on their nervously shifting horses, the icy wind came in gusts, moaning across the rooftops, whipping cloaks like banners, driving thin clouds across the thin sliver of the moon. With a quiet command to stay close, Lan led off down the street. The horses danced and tugged at the reins, eager to be away. Rand looked up warily at the buildings they passed, looming now in the night with their empty windows like eye sockets. Shadows seemed to move. Occasionally there was a clatter, rubble toppled by the wind. At least the eyes are gone. His relief was momentary. Why are they gone? Tom and the Emmons Fielders made a cluster with him, all keeping close enough to touch one another. Egwene's shoulders were hunched, as if she were trying to ease Bella's hooves to the pavement. Rand did not even want to breathe. Sound might attract attention. Abruptly, he realized that a distance had opened ahead of them, separating them from the warder and the Aes Sedai. The two were indistinct shapes, a good 30 paces ahead. "We're falling behind," he murmured, and booted Cloud to a quicker step. A thin tendril of silver-gray fog drifted low across the street ahead of him. "Stop!" It was a strangled shout from Moraine, sharp and urgent, but pitched not to carry far. Uncertainty pulled up short. The splinter of fog lay completely across the street now, slowly fattening as if more were oozing out of the buildings on either side of the street. It was as thick as a man's arm now. Cloud wickered and tried to back further away as Egwene and Tom and the others came upon him. Their horses, too, tossed their heads and bridled against coming too near the fog. Lan and Moraine rode slowly toward the fog, grown to as big around as a leg, stopping on the other side, well back. The Aes Sedai studied the branch of mist that separated them. Rand shrugged at a sudden itch of fear between his shoulder blades. A faint light accompanied the fog, growing as the foggy tentacle became fatter, but still only a little more than the moonlight. The horses shifted uneasily, even Aldeeb and Mondarb.
"What is it?" Nynaeve asked.
"The evil of Shadar Logoth," Moraine replied. "Mashadar. Unseeing, unthinking, moving through the city as aimlessly as a worm burrows through the earth. If it touches you, you will die."
Rand and the others let their horses dance a few quick steps back, but not too far. As much as Rand would have given to be free of the Aes Sedai, she was as safe as home compared to what lay around them.
"Then how do we join you?" Egwene said. "Can you kill it? Clear away?"
Moraine's laughter was bitter and short.
"Mashadar is vast, girl, as vast as Shadar Logoth itself. The whole White Tower could not kill it. If I damaged it enough to let you pass, drawing that much of the one power would pull the half-men like a trumpet call. And Mashadar would rush in to heal whatever harm I did. Rush in and perhaps catch us in its net."
Rand exchanged looks with Egwene, then asked her question again. Moraine sighed before answering.
"I do not like it, but what must be done must be done. This thing will not be above ground everywhere. Other streets will be clear. See that star?"
She twisted in her saddle to point to a red star low in the eastern sky.
"Keep on toward that star, and it will bring you to the river. Whatever happens, keep moving toward the river. Go as quickly as you can. But above all, make no noise. There are still the Trollocs, remember? And 4 half-men."
"But how will we find you again?" Egwene protested.
"I will find you," Moraine said. "Be assured I can find you. Now be off. This thing is utterly mindless, but it can sense food."
Indeed, ropes of silver gray had lifted from the larger body. They drifted, wavering, like the tentacles of 100 arms in the bottom of a waterwood pond. When Rand looked up from the thick trunk of opaque mist, the water and the Aes Sedai were gone. He licked his lips and met his companion's eyes. They were as nervous as he was, and something worse. They all seemed to be waiting for someone else to move first. Night and ruins surrounded them. The Fades were out there, somewhere, and the Trollocs, maybe around the next corner.
The tentacles of fog drifted nearer, halfway to them now, and no longer wavering. They had chosen their intended prey. Suddenly he missed Moraine very much. Everyone was still staring, wondering which way to go. He turned Cloud and the gray broke into a half-trot, tugging against the reins to go faster. As if moving first had made him the leader, everyone followed. With Moraine gone, there was no one to protect them should Mordoth appear, and the Trollocs, and Rand forced himself to stop thinking. He would follow the Red Star. He could hold on to that thought. 3 times they had to backtrack from a street blocked from side to side by a hill of stone and brick the horses could never have crossed. Rand could hear the others breathing short and sharp, just shy of panic. He gritted his teeth to stop his own panting. You have to at least make them think you're not afraid. You're doing a good job, Woolhead. You'll get everybody out safely. They rounded the next corner. A wall of fog bathed the broken pavement with a light as bright as a full moon. Streamers as thick as their horses broke off toward them. Nobody waited. Wheeling, they galloped away in a tight knot with no heed for the clatter of hooves they raised. 2 Trollocs stepped into the street before them, not 10 spans away. For an instant, the humans and the Trollocs just stared at one another, each more surprised than the other. Another pair of Trollocs appeared, and another, colliding with the ones in front, folding into a shocked mass at the sight of the humans. Only for an instant did they remain frozen, though. Guttural howls echoed from the buildings, and the Trollocs bounded forward. The humans scattered like quail. Rand's gray reached full gallop in 3 strides. This way, he shouted, but he heard the same cry from 5 throats. A hasty glance over his shoulder showed him his companions disappearing in as many directions, Trollocs pursuing them all. 3 Trollocs ran at his own heels, catch poles waving in the air. His skin crawled as he realized they were matching Cloud stride for stride. He dropped low on Cloud's neck and urged the gray on, chased by thick cries. The street narrowed ahead, broken-topped buildings leaning out drunkenly. Slowly the empty windows filled with a silvery glow. A dense mist bulging outward. Mashadar. Rand risked a glance over his shoulder. The Trollocs still ran less than 50 paces back. The light from the fog was enough to see them clearly. A fade rode behind them now, and they seemed to flee the half-man as much as to pursue Rand. Ahead of Rand, 6 gray tendrils wavered from the windows, 12 feeling the air. Cloud tossed his head and screamed, but Rand dug his heels in brutally and the horse lunged forward wildly. The tendrils stiffened as Rand galloped between them, but he crouched low on Cloud's neck and refused to look at them. The way beyond was clear. If one of them touches me, light. He booted Cloud harder and the horse leaped forward into the welcome shadows. With Cloud still running, he looked back as soon as the glow of Mashadar began to lessen. The waving gray tentacles of Mashadar blocked half the street, and the Trollocs were balking, but the Fade snatched a whip from its saddle bow, cracking it over the heads of the Trollocs with a sound like a lightning bolt, popping sparks in the air. Crouching, the Trollocs lurched after Rand. The half-man hesitated, black cowl studying Mashadar's reaching arms, before it too spurred forward. The thickening tentacles of fog swung uncertainly for a moment, then struck like vipers. At least 2 attached to each Trolloc, bathing them in gray light. Muzzled heads went back to scream, but fog rolled over open mouths and in, eating the howls. 4 leg-thick tentacles whipped around the Fade, and the half-man and its black horse twitched as if dancing till the cowl fell back, bearing that pale eyeless face. The Fade shrieked. There was no sound from that cry, any more than from the Trollocs. But something came through, a piercing whine just beyond hearing, like all the hornets in the world digging into Rand's ears with all the fear that could exist. Cloud convulsed as if he too heard, and ran harder than ever. Rand hung on, panting, his throat as dry as sand. After a time he realized he could no longer hear the silent shriek of the Fade dying, and suddenly the clatter of his gallop seemed as loud as shouts. He reined Cloud hard, stopping beside a jagged wall, right where 2 streets met. A nameless monument reared in the darkness before him. Slumped in the saddle, he listened, but there was nothing to hear except the blood pounding in his ears. Cold sweat beaded on his face, and he shivered as the wind flailed his coat. Finally, he straightened. Stars spangled the sky where the clouds did not hide them, but the red star low in the east was easy to mark. Is anybody else alive to see it? Were they free or in the Trolloc's hands?
Egwene, light blind me, why didn't you follow me?
If they were alive and free, they would be following that star. If not, the ruins were vast. He could search for days without finding anyone, if he could keep away from the Trollocs. And the Fades, and Mordith, and Mashadar. Reluctantly, he decided to make for the river. He gathered the reins. On the crossing street, one stone fell against another with a sharp click. He froze, not even breathing. He was hidden in the shadows, one step from the corner. Frantically, he thought of backing up. What was behind him? What would make a noise and give him away? He could not remember, and he was afraid to take his eyes from the corner of the building. Darkness bulked at that corner, with the longer darkness of a shaft sticking out of it. Catchpole? Even as the thought flashed into Rand's mind, he dug his heels into Cloud's ribs, and his sword flew from the scabbard. A wordless shout accompanied his charge, and he swung the sword with all of his might. Only a desperate effort stopped the blade short. With a yelp, Matt tumbled back, half falling off his horse and nearly dropping his bow. Rand drew a deep breath and lowered his sword. His arm shook.
Have you seen anybody else? He managed.
Matt swallowed hard before pulling himself awkwardly back into his saddle.
Just the Trollocs.
He put a hand to his throat and licked his lips.
Just Trollocs. You?
Rand shook his head. They must be trying to reach the river. We had better do the same. Matt nodded silently, still feeling his throat, and they started toward the red star. Before they had covered 100 spans, the keening cry of a Trolloc horn rose behind them in the depths of the city. Another answered from outside the walls. Rand shivered, but he kept to his slow pace, watching the darkest places and avoiding them when he could. After one jerk at his reins, as if he might gallop off, Matt did the same. Neither horn sounded again, and it was in silence that they came to an opening in the vine-shrouded wall where a gate had once been. Only the towers remained, standing broken-topped against the black sky. Matt hesitated at the gateway, but Rand said softly, "Is it any safer in here than out there?" He did not slow the gray, and after a moment, Matt followed him out of Shadar Logoth, trying to look every way at once. Rand let out a slow breath. His mouth was dry.
We're going to make it. Light, we're going to make it.
The walls vanished behind, swallowed by the night and the forest. Listening for the slightest sound, Rand kept the red star dead ahead. Suddenly Tom galloped by from behind, slowing only long enough to shout,
"Ride, you fools!"
A moment later, hunting cries and crashes in the brush behind him announced the presence of Trollocs on his trail. Rand dug in his heels, and Cloud sprang after the Gleeman's gelding.
What happens when we get to the river without Moraine? Light, Egwene.
Perrin sat his horse in the shadows, watching the open gateway, some little distance off yet, and absently ran his thumb along the blade of his axe. It seemed to be a clear way out of the ruined city, but he had sat there for 5 minutes, studying it. The wind tossed his shaggy curls and tried to carry his cloak away, but he pulled the cloak back around him without really noticing what he was doing. He knew that Matt and almost everyone else in Emmonsfield considered him slow of thought. It was partly because he was big and usually moved carefully. He had always been afraid he might accidentally break something or hurt somebody, since he was so much bigger than the boys he grew up with. But he really did prefer to think things all the way through if he could. Quick thinking, careless thinking, had put Matt into hot water one time after another. And Matt's quick thinking usually managed to get Rand or him, or both, in the cook pot alongside Matt, too. His throat tightened.
Light. Don't think about being in a cook pot.
He tried to order his thoughts again. Careful thought was the way. There had been some sort of square in front of the gate once, with a huge fountain in its middle. Part of the fountain was still there, a cluster of broken statues standing in a big round basin, and so was the open space around it. To reach the gate, he would have to ride nearly 100 spans with only the night to shield him from searching eyes. That was not a pleasant thought, either. He remembered those unseen watchers too well. He considered the horns he had heard in the city a little while earlier. He had almost turned back, thinking some of the others might have been taken, before realizing that he could not do anything alone if they had been captured. Not against, what did Lan say, 100 Trollocs and 4 Fades? Moraine Sedai said get to the river. He went back to consideration of the gate. Careful thought had not given him much, but he had made his decision. He rode out of the deeper shadow into the lesser darkness. As he did, another horse appeared from the far side of the square and stopped. He stopped too and felt for his axe. It gave him no great sense of comfort. If that dark shape was a fade... Rand? Came a soft, hesitant call. He let out a long, relieved breath. It's Perrin, Egwene, he called back, just as softly. It still sounded too loud in the darkness. The horses came together near the fountain. Have you seen anybody else? They both asked at the same time, and both answered by shaking their heads.
They'll be all right,
Egwene muttered, patting Bella's neck.
Won't they?
Moraine Sedai and Lan will look after them, Perrin replied. They will look after all of us once we get to the river.
He hoped it was so. He felt a great relief once they were beyond the gate, even if there were Trollocs in the forest. Or Fades. He stopped that line of thought. The bare branches were not enough to keep him from guiding on the Red Star, and they were beyond Mordoth's reach now. That one had frightened him worse than the Trollocs ever had. Soon they would reach the river and meet Moraine, and she would put them beyond the Trollocs' reach as well. He believed it because he needed to believe. The wind scraped branches together and rustled the leaves and needles on the evergreens. A nighthawk's lonely cry drifted in the dark, and he and Egwene moved their horses closer together as though they were huddling for warmth. They were very much alone. A Trolloc horn sounded somewhere behind them, quick wailing blasts urging the hunters to hurry, hurry. Then thick, half-human howls rose on their tail, spurred on by the horn. Howls that grew sharper as they caught the human scent. Perrin put his horse to a gallop, shouting, "Come on!" Egwene came, both of them booting their horses, heedless of noise, heedless of the branches that slapped at them. As they raced through the trees, guided as much by instinct as by the dim moonlight, Bella fell behind. Perrin looked back. Egwene kicked the mare and flailed her with the reins, but it was doing no good. By their sounds, the Trollocs were coming closer. He drew in enough not to leave her behind.
Hurry,
he shouted. He could make out the Trollocs now, huge dark shapes bounding through the trees, bellowing and snarling to chill the blood. He gripped the haft of his axe, hanging at his belt, until his knuckles hurt.
Hurry, Egwene, hurry!
Suddenly his horse screamed and he was falling, tumbling out of the saddle as the horse dropped away beneath him. He flung out his hands to brace himself, and splashed headfirst into icy water. He had ridden right off the edge of a sheer bluff into the Arunel. The shock of freezing water ripped a gasp from him, and he swallowed more than a little before he managed to fight his way to the surface. He felt more than heard another splash, and thought that Egwene must have come right after him. Panting and blowing, he treaded water. It was not easy to keep afloat. His coat and cloak were already sodden, and his boots had filled. He looked around for Egwene, but saw only the glint of moonlight on the black water, ruffled by the wind.
Egwene! Egwene!
A spear flashed right in front of his eyes and threw water in his face. Others splashed into the river around him, too. Guttural voices raised an argument on the riverbank, and the Trolloc spears stopped coming. But he gave up on calling for the time being. The current washed him downriver, but the thick shouts and snarls followed along the bank, keeping pace. Undoing his cloak, he let the river take it. A little less weight to drag him down. Doggedly, he set out swimming for the far bank. There were no Trollocs there, he hoped. He swam the way they did back home in the ponds in the Waterwood, stroking with both hands, kicking with both feet, keeping his head out of the water. At least he tried to keep his head out of the water. It was not easy. Even without the cloak, his coat and boots each seemed to weigh as much as he did, and the axe dragged at his waist, threatening to roll him over if it did not pull him under. He thought about letting the river have that, too. He thought about it more than once. It would be easy, much easier than struggling out of his boots, for instance. But every time he thought of it, he thought of crawling out on the far bank to find Trollocs waiting. The axe would not do him much good against half a dozen Trollocs, or even against one, maybe. But it was better than his bare hands. After a while, he was not even certain he would be able to lift the axe if Trollocs were there. His arms and legs became leaden. It was an effort to move them, and his face no longer came as far out of the river with each stroke. He coughed from water that went up his nose. A day at the forge has no odds on this, he thought wearily, and just then his kicking foot struck something. It was not until he kicked it again that he realized what it was. The bottom. He was in the shallows. He was across the river. Sucking air through his mouth, he got to his feet, splashing about as his legs almost gave way. He fumbled his axe out of its loop as he floundered ashore, shivering in the wind. He did not see any Trollocs. He did not see Egwene, either. Just a few scattered trees along the riverbank and a moonlight ribbon on the water. When he had his breath again, he called their names again and again. Faint shouts from the far side answered him. Even at that distance, he could make out the harsh voices of Trollocs. His friends did not answer, though. The wind surged, its moan drowning out the Trollocs, and he shivered. It was not cold enough to freeze the water soaking his clothes, but it felt as if it was. It sliced to the bone with an icy blade. Hugging himself was only a gesture that did not stop the shivering. Alone, he climbed tiredly up the riverbank to find shelter against the wind. Rand patted Cloud's neck, soothing the gray with whispers. The horse tossed his head and danced on quick feet. The Trollocs had been left behind, or so it seemed, but Cloud had the smell of them thick in his nostrils. Matt rode with an arrow knocked, watching for surprises out of the night, while Rand and Tom peered through the branches, searching for the red star that was their guide. Keeping it in view had been easy enough, even with all the branches overhead, so long as they were riding straight toward it. But then more Trollocs had appeared ahead, and they went galloping off to the side with both packs howling after them. The Trollocs could keep up with a horse, but only for 100 paces or so, and finally they left the pursuit and the howls behind. But with all the twists and turns, they had lost the guiding star. "I still say it's over there," Matt said, gesturing off to his right. "We were going north at the end, and that means east is that way."
"There it is," Tom said abruptly.
He pointed through the tangled branches to their left, straight at the red star. Matt mumbled something under his breath. Out of the corner of his eye, Rand caught the movement as a Trolloc leaped out from behind a tree without a sound, swinging its catchpole. Rand dug his heels in, and the gray bounded forward just as two more plunged from the shadows after the first. A noose brushed the back of Rand's neck, sending a shiver down his spine. An arrow took one of the bestial faces in the eye, then Matt swung in beside him as their horses pounded through the trees. They were running toward the river, he realized, but he was not sure it was going to do any good. The Trollocs sped after them, almost close enough to reach out and grab the streaming tails of their horses. Half a step gained, and the catchpoles could drag them both out of their saddles. He leaned low on the gray's neck to put that much more distance between his own neck and the nooses. Matt's face was nearly buried in his horse's mane, but Rand wondered where Tom was. Had the gleeman decided he was better off on his own, since all three Trollocs had fastened on the boys? Suddenly, Tom's gelding galloped out of the night, hard behind the Trollocs. The Trollocs had only time enough to look back in surprise before the gleeman's hands whipped back and then forward. Moonlight flashed off steel. One Trolloc tumbled forward, rolling over and over before landing in a heap, while a second dropped to its knees with a scream, clawing at its back with both hands. The third snarled, baring a muzzleful of sharp teeth, but as its companions toppled, it whirled away into the darkness. Tom's hand made the whip-like motion again, and the Trolloc shrieked. But the shrieks faded into the distance as it ran. Rand and Matt pulled up and stared at the gleeman.
My best knives, Tom muttered,
but he made no effort to get down and retrieve them.
That one will bring others. I hope the river isn't too far. I hope.
Instead of saying what else he hoped, he shook his head and set off at a quick canter. Rand and Matt fell in behind him. Soon they reached a low bank where trees grew right to the edge of the night-black water, its moon-streaked surface riffled by the wind. Rand could not see the far side at all. He did not like the idea of crossing on a raft in the dark, but he liked the idea of staying on this side even less. I'll swim if I have to. Somewhere away from the river, a Trolloc horn brayed, sharp, quick, and urgent in the darkness. It was the first sound from the horns since they had left the ruins. Rand wondered if it meant some of the others had been captured.
No use staying here all night, Tom said. Pick a direction, upriver or down.
But Moraine and the others could be anywhere, Matt protested. Any way we choose could just take us further away.
So it could.
Clucking to his gelding, Tom turned downriver, heading along the bank.
So it could.
Rand looked at Matt, who shrugged, and they turned after him. For a time, nothing changed. The bank was higher in some places, lower in others. The trees grew thicker, or thinned out in small clearings, but the night and the river and the wind were all the same, cold and black. And no Trollocs. That was one change Rand was glad to forego. Then he saw a light ahead, just a single point. As they drew closer, he could see that the light was well above the river, as if it were in a tree. Tom quickened the pace and began to hum under his breath. Finally, they could make out the source of the light, a lantern, hoisted atop one of the masts of a large trader's boat, tied up for the night beside a small clearing in the trees. The boat, a good 80 feet long, shifted slightly with the current, tugging against the mooring ropes tied to trees. The rigging hummed and creaked in the wind. The lantern doubled the moonlight on the deck, but no one was in sight.
Now that, Tom said as he dismounted, is better than an Aes Sedai's raft, isn't it?
He stood with his hands on his hips, and even in the dark his smugness was apparent.
It doesn't look as if this vessel is made to carry horses, but considering the danger he's in, which we are going to warn him of, the captain may be reasonable. Just let me do all the talking. And bring your blankets and saddlebags, just in case.
Rand climbed down and began untying the things behind his saddle.
You don't mean to leave without the others, do you?
Tom had no chance to say what he meant to do. Into the clearing burst two Trollocs howling and waving their catchpoles, with four more right behind. The horses reared and whinnied. Shouts in the distance said more Trollocs were on the way.
Onto the boat, Tom shouted. Quick, leave all that. Run!
Suiting his own words, he ran for the boat, patches flapping and instrument cases on his back banging together.
You on the boat, he shouted. Wake up, you fools! Trollocs!
Rand jerked his blanket roll and saddlebags free of the last thong and was right on the gleeman's heels. Tossing his burdens over the rail, he vaulted after them. He just had time to see a man curled up on the deck beginning to sit up as if he had only that moment awakened when his feet came down right on top of the fellow. The man grunted loudly. Rand stumbled, and a hooked catchpole slammed into the rail just where he had come over. Shouts rose all over the boat, and feet pounded along the deck. Hairy hands caught the railing beside the catchpole, and a goat-horned head lifted above it. Off balance, stumbling, Rand still managed to draw his sword and swing. With a scream, the Trolloc dropped away. Men ran everywhere on the boat, shouting, hacking mooring lines with axes. The boat lurched and swung as if eager to be off. Up in the bow, three men struggled with a Trolloc. Someone thrust over the side with a spear, though Rand could not see what he was stabbing at. A bowstring snapped and snapped again. The man Rand had stepped on scrabbled away from him on hands and knees, then flung up his hands when he saw Rand looking at him.
Spare me, he cried. Take whatever you want. Take the boat, take everything, but spare me.
Suddenly something slammed across Rand's back, smashing him to the deck. His sword skittered away from his outstretched hand. Open-mouthed, gasping for a breath that would not come, he tried to reach the sword. His muscles responded with agonized slowness. He writhed like a slug. The fellow who wanted to be spared gave one frightened, covetous look at the sword, then vanished into the shadows. Painfully, Rand managed to look over his shoulder and knew his luck had run out. A wolf-muzzled Trolloc stood balanced on the railing, staring down at him, holding the splintered end of the catch-pole that had knocked the wind out of him. Rand struggled to reach the sword, to move, to get away, but his arms and legs moved jerkily and only half as he wanted. They wobbled and went in odd directions. His chest felt as if it were strapped with iron bands. Silver spots swam in his eyes. Frantically, he hunted for some way to escape. Time seemed to slow as the Trolloc raised the jagged pole as if to spear him with it. To Rand, the creature appeared to be moving as if in a dream. He watched the thick arm go back. He could already feel the broken haft ripping through his spine, feel the pain of it tearing him open. He thought his lungs would burst. I'm going to die. Light, help me, I'm going to... The Trolloc's arm started forward, driving the splintered shaft, and Rand found the breath for one yell. No! Suddenly the ship lurched, and a boom swung out of the shadows to catch the Trolloc across the chest with a crunch of breaking bones, sweeping it over the side. For a moment, Rand lay panting and staring up at the boom swinging back and forth above him. That has to have used up my luck, he thought. There can't be any more after that. Shakily, he got to his feet and picked up his sword, for once holding it in both hands the way Lan had taught him. But there was nothing left on which to use it. The gap of black water between the boat and the bank was widening quickly. The cries of Trollocs were fading behind in the night. As he sheathed his sword and slumped against the railing, a stocky man in a coat that hung to his knees strode up the deck to glare at him. Long hair that fell to his thick shoulders and a beard that left his upper lip bare framed a round face. Round, but not soft. The boom swung out again, and the bearded man spared part of his glare for that as he caught it. It made a crisp splat against his broad palm.
Kelp!
He bellowed.
Fortune! Where do you be, Gelb?
He spoke so fast, with all the words running together, that Rand could barely understand him.
You can no hide from me on my own ship. Get Flor and Gelb out here.
A crewman appeared with a bullseye lantern, and two more pushed a narrow-faced man into the circle of light it cast. Rand recognized the fellow who had offered him the boat. The man's eye shifted from side to side, never meeting those of the stocky man. The captain, Rand thought. A bruise was coming up on Gelb's forehead where one of Rand's boots had caught him.
Were you no supposed to secure this boom, Gelb?
The captain asked with surprising calm, though just as fast as before. Gelb looked truly surprised.
But I did. Tied it down tight. I admit I'm a little slow about things now and then, Captain Doman, but I get them done.
So you be slow, do you?
No, so slow at sleeping. Sleeping when you should be standing watch.
We could be murdered to a man for all of you.
No, Captain, no. It was him.
Gelb pointed straight at Rand.
I was on guard, just like I was supposed to be, when he sneaked up and hit me with a club.
He raised the bruise on his head, winced, and glared at Rand.
I fought him, but then the Trollocs came. He's in league with them, Captain. A dark friend. In league with the Trollocs.
In league with my aged grandmother,
Captain Doman roared.
Did I no warn you the last time, Gelb? At Whitebridge, off you do go. Get out of my sight before I put you off now.
Gelb darted out of the lantern light, and Doman stood, opening and closing his hands, while he stared at nothing.
These Trollocs do be following me. Why will they no leave me be? Why?
Rand looked over the rail and was shocked to find the riverbank no longer in sight. Two men manned the long steering oar that stuck out over the stern, and there were six sweeps working to a side now, pulling the ship like a water bug further out into the river.
Captain, Rand said, we have friends back there. If you go back and pick them up, I am sure they'll reward you.
The captain's round face swung toward Rand, and when Tom and Matt appeared, he included them in his expressionless stare as well.
Captain, Tom began with a bow. Allow me to.
You come below,
Captain Doman said,
where I can see what manner of thing be hauled up on my deck. Come. Fortune desert me. Somebody secure this horn-cursed boom.
As crewmen rushed to take the boom, he stumped off toward the stern of the boat. Rand and his two companions followed. Captain Doman had a tidy cabin in the stern, reached by climbing down a short ladder, where everything gave the impression of being in its proper place, right down to the coats and cloaks hanging from pegs on the back of the door. The cabin stretched the width of the ship, with a broad bed built against one side, and a heavy table built out from the other. There was only one chair with a high back and sturdy arms, and the captain took that himself, motioning the others to find places on various chests and benches that were the only other furnishings. A loud harumph stopped Matt from sitting on the bed.
Now, said the captain, when they were all seated, my name be Bale Doman, captain and owner of the Spray, which be this ship. Now who be you, and where be you going out here in the middle of nowhere? And why should I no throw you over the side for the trouble you've brought me?
Rand still had as much trouble as before in following Doman's rapid speech. When he worked out the last part of what the captain had said, he blinked in surprise. Throw us over the side? Matt hurriedly said, we didn't mean to cause you any trouble. Run our way to Camelin and then to—
And then where the wind takes us, Tom interrupted smoothly. That's how gleemen travel, like dust on the wind. I am a gleeman, you understand, Tom Marilyn by name.
He shifted his cloak so the multi-hued patches stirred as if the captain could have missed them.
These two country louts want to become my apprentices, though I am not yet sure I want them.
Rand looked at Matt, who grinned.
That be all very well, man, Captain Doman said placidly. But it tells me nothing. Less. Fortune prick me, that place be on no road to Canaan from anywhere I ever heard tell of.
Now that is a story, Tom said, and he straightaway began to unfold it.
According to Tom, he had been trapped by the winter snows in a mining town in the mountains of mist beyond Berlon. While there, he heard legends of a treasure dating from the Trolloc Wars, in the lost ruin of a city called Aradhal. Now it just so happened that he had earlier learned the location of Aradhal from a map given him many years ago by a dying friend in Ilion, whose life he had once saved. A man who expired breathing that the map would make Tom rich, which Tom never believed until he heard the legends. When the snows melted enough, he set out with a few companions, including his two would-be apprentices, and after a journey of many hardships, they actually found the ruined city. But it turned out the treasure had belonged to one of the Dreadlords themselves, and Trollocs had been sent to fetch it back to Sheogul. Almost every danger they really had faced, Trollocs, Murdrol, Drakkar, Mordith, Mashadar, assailed them at one point or another of the story, though the way Tom told it, they all seemed to be aimed at him personally, and to have been handled by him with the greatest adroitness. With much derring do, mostly by Tom, they escaped, pursued by Trollocs, though they became separated in the night, until finally Tom and his two companions sought refuge in the last place left to them, Captain Doman's most welcome ship. As the gleeman finished up, Rand realized his mouth had been hanging open for some time, and shut it with a click. When he looked at Matt, his friend was staring wide-eyed at the gleeman. Captain Doman drummed his fingers on the arm of his chair.
That be a tale many folk would no believe. Of course, I did see the Trollocs, did I know?
Every word true, Tom said blandly, from one who lived it.
Happen you have some of this treasure with you?
Tom spread his hands regretfully.
Alas, what little we managed to carry away was with our horses, which bolted when those last Trollocs appeared. All I have left are my flute and my harp, a few coppers and the clothes on my back. But believe me, you want no part of that treasure. It has the taint of the Dark One. Best to leave it to the ruins and the Trollocs.
So you've no money to pay your passage. I'd no let my own brother sail with me if he could no pay his passage, especially if he brought Trollocs behind him to hack up my railings and cut up my rigging. Why should I no let you swim back where you came from and be rid of you?
You wouldn't just put us ashore, Matt said. Not with Trollocs there.
Who said anything about shore?
Doman replied dryly. He studied them a moment, then spread his hands flat on the table.
Bail Doman, be a reasonable man. I'd no toss you over the side, if there be a way out of it. Now, I see one of your apprentices has a sword. I need a good sword, and fine fellow that I be, I'll let you have passage far as Whitebridge for it.
Tom opened his mouth, and Rand spoke up quickly.
No!
Tam had not given it to him to trade away. He ran his hand down the hilt, feeling the bronze heron. As long as he had it, it was as if Tam were with him. Doman shook his head.
Well, if it be no, it be no. But Bail Doman no give free passage, not to his own mother.
Reluctantly, Rand emptied his pocket. There was not much, a few coppers, and the silver coin Moraine had given him. He held it out to the captain. After a second, Matt sighed and did the same. Tom glared, but a smile replaced it so quickly that Rand was not sure it had been there at all. Captain Doman deftly plucked the two fat silver coins out of the boy's hands and produced a small set of scales and a clinking bag from a brass-bound chest behind his chair. After careful weighing, he dropped the coins in the bag and returned them each, some smaller silver and copper. Mostly copper.
As far as Whitebridge, he said,
making a neat entry in his leather-bound ledger.
That's a dear passage just to Whitebridge, Tom grumbled.
Plus damages to my vessel, the captain answered placidly.
He put the scales and the bag back in the chest and closed it in a satisfied way.
Plus a bit for bringing trollocs down on me, so I must run down river in the night, when there be shallows aplenty to pile me up.
What about the others, Rand said. Will you take them, too? They should have reached the river by now. Or they soon will, and they'll see that lantern on your mast.
Captain Doman's eyebrows rose in surprise.
Happen you think we be standing still, man? Fortune prick me, we be 3-4 miles downriver from where you came aboard. Trollocs make those fellows put their backs to the oars. They know trollocs better than they like. And the current helps, too. But it makes no never mind. I'd no put in again tonight if my old grandmother was on the riverbank. I may no put in again at all until I reach Whitebridge. I've had my fill of trollocs dogging my heels long before tonight, and I'll have no more, can I help it?
Tom leaned forward interestedly.
You have had encounters with trollocs before? Lately?
Doman hesitated, eyeing Tom narrowly, but when he spoke he merely sounded disgusted.
I wintered in Saldea, man. Not my choice, but the river froze early, and the ice broke up late. They say you can see the blight from the highest towers in Maradan, but I've no mind for that. I've been there before, and there'll always be talk of trollocs attacking a farm or the like. This winter past, though, there'll be farms burning every night. Aye, and whole villages, too, betimes. They even came right up to the city walls. And if that be no bad enough, the people be all saying it meant the Dark One be stirring, that the last days be come.
He gave a shiver and scratched at his head, as if the thought made his scalp itch.
I can no wait to get back where people think trollocs be just tales. The stories I tell be travelers' lies.
Rand stopped listening. He stared at the opposite wall and thought about Egwene and the others. It hardly seemed right for him to be safe on the spray, while they were still back there in the night somewhere. The captain's cabin did not seem so comfortable as before. He was surprised when Tom pulled him to his feet. The gleeman pushed Matt and him toward the ladder, with apologies over his shoulder to Captain Doman for the country louts. Rand climbed up without a word. Once they were on deck, Tom looked around quickly to make sure he would not be overheard, then growled, I could have gotten us passage for a few songs and stories if you two hadn't been so quick to show silver.
I'm not so sure, Matt said. He sounded serious about throwing us in the river to me.
Rand walked slowly to the rail and leaned against it, staring back up the night-shrouded river. He could not see anything but black, not even the riverbank. After a minute, Tom put a hand on his shoulder, but he did not move.
There isn't anything you can do, lad. Besides, they're likely safe with Moraine and Lan by this time. Can you think of any better than those two for getting the lot of them clear?
I tried to talk her out of coming, Rand said.
You did what you could, lad. No one could ask more.
I told her I'd take care of her. I should have tried harder.
The creak of the sweeps and the hum of the rigging in the wind made a mournful tune.
I should have tried harder, he whispered.